Hi, everybody. Welcome back. This is Shelby with Hooks, Books, and Crime, and it's Craft and Story Time. I have my adorable spooky-themed crochet hook from Crochet in the Sky. It's Beetlejuice. It's adorable. So I'm actually crocheting a red flag today because who we're talking about today is just a walking red flag. She's awful. So with that being said, let's get started. Of course, if you like this, please like, subscribe, share, get it out. I don't know. I'm all weird about this still, but I'm excited because I feel like I'm getting better. I hope you think I'm getting better. I know there's not a lot of you, but I hope there is one day. So in the likelihood or opportunity that should happen, I hope it does progress. But yes, so I'm just chaining and crocheting in the round here. I just started it because I really feel like crocheting a red flag is fitting, and you never know, maybe I'll just walk around with it, and every time somebody rubs me the wrong way, I'll just put it in the air like, go away, red flag, flag on the play. But all right, let's get started here. Oh my god, what did I do already with the difficulties? I'll just start this over. Okay, who are we talking about today, Shelby? We're talking about Amy Bishop. A woman that really, people just gave her too many chances. I blame her parents for a lot of it, honestly. And you'll see why. So, Amy Bishop was born on April 24th, 1965. And, you know, I'm just going to go ahead and call that already a red flag because that is the same birthday as one of my ex-boyfriends. So, red flag. But he's not even all that bad. He just was bad for me. So, anyway, still a red flag. Red flag. And she's raised in Braintree. It's a hell of a town name. Braintree, Massachusetts. And she has a younger brother. Her brother is Seth. Seth is born 3 years after her. And the two, for the most part, like, Seth seems like he's just, like, he just loves his sister. You know, they bicker and everything. But you know, he's definitely a supporter. He wants her to thrive. He wants her to succeed. He's definitely, you know, a good kid. The problem is Seth just happens to excel at everything. He is one of those naturally gifted people that, and I think we all know someone like that. It's just, you know, no matter what they try, they excel in it. Things just go well for them. And he seems to also have a good attitude. He's apparently very likable. I don't know what's going on with this. It's making me upset. But, yeah, Seth is just a really, seems to be a really good kid. Amy wasn't like a troublemaker, nothing like that. But, you know, just, I'm trying to say, you know, less. I notice I say, you know, a lot. So that's already one. And I'm not even that far in. So I'm going to try to work on that as we go. I'm trying to, you know, be mindful of that. Anywho. So, for example, Amy is, she's very good at violin. Seth just happens to be better at it. Amy is very smart. She's very interested in science. She's kind of a sickly kid. And I swear, she's had a pageboy haircut like her whole life. And it's like Lord Farquaad with bangs. Like, I don't know who told her, like, you should keep this going. I mean, somebody married her with that haircut, but don't do it. Just don't. It's awful. There's a reason why I got left behind in history. Ugly. And yeah, so they're both very talented. He's supported. But she's very bitter towards Seth. Very bitter. Because she sees that he just surpasses her. Not even trying. She's definitely the more competitive one. He's just kind of like, hey, I'm just happy to be here. I'm just happy to go through this with you. I'm just happy we're doing this together. And she's kind of just seething that he's like, whatever they're going to do together, he's probably going to be better than her. And, you know, I know what that's like. That's my sister. My sister was good at everything. And for me to get to just like even a fraction of her level, I had to work far harder than she had to. And, you know, it made me a little bitter, but at the same time, it made me want to try harder. I didn't want to give up and be like, well, I'm not doing this anymore. It just made me try harder. And it also, you know, I just accepted that my sister was going to be better than me in mainly sports. It's not that I wasn't athletic or anything. She was just naturally better. She just was. I was the smarter one, but I mean, it's not like she was a dummy either, you know? She could hold her own in that area too. And it seems like Amy couldn't accept this. And she just bothered her the whole time. Seth was apparently very likable as a student, very popular. They both seemed like they were both shy. But I guess even people who didn't know Seth very well, or maybe they weren't like really good friends with him, they liked him. They thought he was a good kid. Amy, on the other hand, was considered like she thought she was better than everybody. Like everybody, she was above everybody. More interested in herself than anybody else. But as mentioned before, her and Seth really took a liking to science. There it is again. Well, I said I'm trying to avoid also. Amy is, she was a very sickly child. Spent a lot of times in the ER, urgent care, stuff like that. This got her to want to pursue science as a career. That way she could cure these ailments that really disrupted her childhood. Like, for example, asthma. She had asthma. And it, like, I mean, even in the 90s, kids with asthma, that was still very, I mean, it's not like people like brush off asthma anymore. But back then, there were so many different ways that people were trying to treat it. We just didn't know as much about it as we do now, which is why I think there's so much more, it's so much more manageable. I don't even know if we had asthma action plans yet, which we have now. Because my daughter had asthma onset from allergies when she was a baby. Well, she had it up until she was 6 and she grew out of it. But you know, there was a whole action plan for it. I don't even remember kids with asthma that I went to school with having anything like that. But she wanted to pursue science. So she graduates, she goes to Northeastern University, and Seth actually goes and attends the same college as her 3 years later. And, you know, it's kind of the same thing there. Seth is thriving. He's making more friends. He's, you know, he seems to just draw people in from what it seems like. He's doing really well. Amy, on the other hand, is actually, her friends are diminishing. She's losing friends. And it's probably because she's so dismissive. But you'll see that she's very, she's one of those people, always the victim, never the problem. I feel like she has that mindset. So if she's losing friends, I'm pretty sure she's thinking, you know, what's something with them. It's not me. It's like, no, bitch, it's you. You're the problem. So cut to December 9th, 1986. And Amy gets in an argument with her father. It seems pretty trivial. Nobody can even remember what the argument was about. So it makes me think it's just, you know, your typical kind of parent-child bickering. Nothing serious. But, you know, even though she wasn't a teenager, she's 21, you're still kind of a pain in the ass and, you know, kind of demanding and unaware for a lot of people. Like, life hasn't really hit you yet. So you think you know everything. So I feel like it's one of those things. She probably thought she knew better than her dad in something because she thinks she's so smart, which she is. But her parents aren't dummies either. Her father is a professor and her mom's in local politics. So this is a girl who grew up in a well-rounded family because they're educated. They're aware of politics and, you know, just news, current affairs. It's definitely a smart household. So can't really say that maybe even if she was bigger with her dad, maybe she probably, big chance she didn't know better than him. She's just a pain in the ass. So the argument ends when her dad's just like, I'm gonna go finish Christmas shopping. So he leaves. And apparently, their house had been robbed, so Amy didn't like being home alone. So, what do? When you are a little nervous being home alone? Do you call a friend over? No, you go and grab the family shotgun. Because that's what you do, right? She goes and finds the family shotgun, loads it, accidentally fires it in her room. And, like, you would think, like, when you accidentally fire a shotgun, of all things, with this insane recoil, you'd be like, oh, I'm not touching that, you know, put it down, like, never mind, I'll just sit it next to me, something like that. Nope, she still holds on to it, completely unfazed. So her mom and Seth arrive home at the same time. They come inside, and she goes downstairs to meet them, and she actually asks Seth to show her how to unload the gun again, because she forgot. And as they're transferring it to each other, gun fires and it hits Seth in the chest. Seth is killed immediately. Now, what does Amy do when she shoots her brother? You would think, I mean, what would most of us do? Drop the gun. Oh my God, what did I do? What did I do? You know, you start freaking out. No. Amy, still with the gun, runs. She runs. Where does she run to? Not the woods. She runs to an auto dealership. Why an auto dealership? Because she's going to hold the mechanic up at gunpoint. She tells the mechanic that she is a battered wife. She's trying to escape from her husband, from her abusive husband, and that she needs a car immediately. Like, why? Why such an elaborate lie? Luckily, the police arrive while she's at this dealership. Takes them a while, but they are able to arrest her. But when they arrest her, they realize the gun's loaded again. And, you know, we know shotguns. It's a pump action shotgun. So you got to rack the slide. You know that, like that big one? Play, I'm sure, you know, Fortnite, the big one? That's what she's carrying. She racked the slide again. Why would you load the gun again after you shot your brother? Why? I don't even want to touch it if I accidentally shot, like, my sibling. No. And she's just there like, next lady. No. Bad. So, even though she's arrested, no charges are held against her. She's not held responsible for shooting her brother, nor is she responsible for holding a mechanic up at gunpoint. I'd be fucking pissed if I was that mechanic, the mechanic's family, or the mechanic's wife. I'd be raising fucking hell. And it's because, like I said, her mom was in local politics. And apparently she was, like, in with the sheriff. Like, they were good friends. So, we know how that works. So, Amy faces no repercussions. And she just carries on with her life. Her parents stick by her side, and as far as the family's concerned, this was an accident. And then they just move on. They don't even move out of the house. They stay in the house. So then Amy, you know, she goes back to college. She meets her husband, Jim. I should say James, because apparently she insisted that he go by James instead of Jim, because it was more sophisticated. She wanted a distinguished man. I'm going to call that as another red flag. Like, he's still in college. So. But who are you to tell anybody to change their name? I mean, really? Lady. Bring it down. Come on. That's ridiculous. But good old James was like, yes, ma'am. So. We all know why she married him. Because he listens. He's a good boy. She marries him. Apparently, they're a dorky couple. And when I say dorky, I don't mean because they were both in the science program together. I mean dorky because they LARP. It's a page boy haircut pretending to be a knight. That's who we're talking about. Why would you expect such heinousness from that? Usually they're harmless. And that's not the case with Amy. She's, like I said, a walking red flag. I wish my red flag was done, but I'm talking and I'm crocheting and I'm interacting, so I'm not going to be able to get this as fast, but it'll get there. So Amy, she gets married to Jim, and at the same time, she gets accepted into Harvard's PhD program for genetics. That's impressive as shit. She's no dummy. She's smart. She gets into this program. Her and James get married. And they have three girls. Very quickly, they have three daughters. But, I mean, Amy is able. She is determined. And, I mean, you gotta give credit where credit's due sometimes. The fact that this woman was able to have three kids, be very involved in their lives, be very involved in school, and still graduate with her doctorate is just phenomenal, really. That is a hell of an accomplishment. Finishing alone, finishing with one baby alone, finishing with three babies. That's crazy to me. She was determined. And she was able to get what she wanted. She was able to accomplish it. So, now, Amy, this is when things start getting like really hairy and you start realizing who Amy is. So, for example, Amy and James at one point are investigated because when Amy, you know, she just graduated, she's working. Or she was doing some kind of program, I think, like trying to get credits. Her and James were actually interviewed because a pipe bomb arrived at the lab instructor's house. Well, why did they think it was Amy? Well, for one, this lab instructor felt that Amy wasn't meeting expectations. And because she wasn't meeting expectations, it's believed that Amy didn't like the idea that this man's recommendation would be, you know, not necessarily negative, but it wouldn't be as sterling and complimentary as she would hope or want. So what do? You blow him up, but it didn't work. That person survived. They really couldn't prove that it was Amy and her husband. What the fuck? They couldn't prove it. So they, nothing ever happens from there. But then, let's see here. And this is in 1993 with the pipe bomb, by the way. And so the thing is with James cannot keep a job. Super smart. Probably not the best at social skills. I couldn't find anything as to why he can't keep a job. I don't know if it's one of those things where he's someone who doesn't like being told what to do. And he just does what he wants. I think he's more lazy. That's what I'm thinking. I think he's just lazy. No initiative. Things like that. And I think when you're in those fields, nobody has time for that kind of stuff. Like, no, you need to be on it because everybody else is on it. We're saving lives here. So he's kind of, I hate saying it this way, I feel like he's kind of Amy's little bitch boy, honestly. His whole life is pleasing Amy. And from what it sounds like, full-time job. I don't know what's going on with this damn thing. It's pissing me off. But yeah, so Amy is the sole provider. James just, you know, does whatever Amy says. You know, definitely lives by that code, happy wife, happy life, which I'm not much of a fan of. But yeah, that's that household, apparently. James just, you know, awaits her beck and call and raises their girls. So then, 2001, Amy gives birth to her fourth and last child. She gives birth to a baby boy. Oddly enough, this baby's delivered on her brother's birthday. So what does she name this boy? She names him Seth, which is just so gross to me. Like, ew, even if it was an accident. you killed him. You're killing your son. You're like naming your son after your brother that you killed. That's so weird to me. How do you even like tell that story? Mommy, why am I named Seth? Oh, because that was your uncle's name. Where is my uncle? He died. Like, you don't go even into further detail. How did he die? Accidental shooting. Do you want to go outside? I don't know. What a weird conversation. Like, I don't know. Usually it's a happy story when you tell someone that. But nope, not in her case. But Amy does Amy. So she gives birth to her son Seth. Things still seem to be okay until 2003 rolls along. And not 2002, Seth is one. Good old Amy goes, I swear, like, you can't even fucking make this shit up. Amy gets into starts off as a verbal altercation at an IHOP because a woman got to the high chair before Amy could. And this cannot be. This is an outrage. Amy will not stand for this. So she verbally abuses this woman, basically accosts her, and then punches her in the face over a high chair. And doesn't say Amy's name on it, nothing. But Amy is that entitled. A fucking high chair. Like, lady, get a grip. So she ends up on probation, and then I believe it ends up getting dismissed. But this is what I mean about a walking red flag. Like, this girl is just, I don't know. It may, like, and this is why I blame the parents. But, you know, I blame the parents because I don't believe they held her accountable as much as they should have in situations. But I think we also know that there's times where the parents try and try and try, and their child is just like this rogue, like, child person, and everything they're trying to instill in them just isn't landing. And, you know, you can only do so much. So I think it's both. I think Amy was going to be like this regardless, but I think her parents also played a part in it. Now, she accosts a woman, 2002. Or not even accosts, she assaults someone. And then, in 2003, they relocate to Alabama. They go to Alabama, and she starts working at the University of Alabama in Huntsville. She works for their biology. Good Lord, Shelby. She works for in their biology department. So while she's working here, so professors have a duty. In order to keep your status and your job, professors have to be published. You have to write papers, articles. You have to be pushing out work in your field, research studies, clinical trial outcomes and research, things like that. You have to be publishing. But instead of doing that, Amy is focused on her own project. Her and James, because remember, James went to college with her. James is smart. He's just not doing anything. I'm not going to say that. He's a stay-at-home dad. If he's cleaning and taking care of the house, you know what? Good for him, because that is a job. I know people are like, this is not a job. When you have a bunch of kids and have to take care of a house, it's a lot. I am a work-from-home and stay-at-home mom. I do both of them. It sucks. It doesn't suck. It's fucking hard. It's hard. It's exhausting. Which is why these only come out once every other week. Because where is the time? They move to Alabama. What they create is... Let me check my notes. Because I swear, even when I write this goddamn thing down, I get it wrong. It's a cell automated incubator. And what does this do? Couldn't tell you. But it is said to be a game changer in their field. This, like, it's going to not, I don't want to say revolutionize, but it is definitely going to bump things up a step. So, which is great that they made this invention. The problem is, she's neglecting her duties. She hasn't published anything. And for that, there's a consequence. She learns she is not getting tenure. And basically, what that means is at the end of that academic year, she will not have a job. Once that semester ends, her career ends at that school. It's done. And again, she's the sole provider. So her family's income is about to be cut off. She needs to find something else. So when she comes to this realization, she's appealing her denial of tenure. Her final appeal is denied. She is still not getting tenure. She goes into a depression. She's withdrawn, low energy, but she's also erratic and explosive. She is explosive with her neighbors. Like, oh my God, like, could you imagine living next to this woman? Good grief. If a high chair pissed her off, what wouldn't, really? Apparently, pushed to a point, because it seems like you just got to breathe wrong next to this woman and she'll lose her shit. But at some point, she finds it necessary to back into her neighbor's basketball court. And, you know, police have been called at one time to separate her and another neighbor because they were fighting. They got into a fight. And I'm sorry, every time I say stuff like that about her, I start laughing because I've never seen anybody with a pageboy haircut get in a fight. Like, why the haircut? It's terrible. So, she's withdrawn, she's erratic, you know, she's cracking. It's all coming down on her. And that's a lot for anybody to handle. But someone who has to have control, has to have everything they want, no accountability, and feels they deserve anything and everything when they say, that's an even bigger crack. She's going to crack harder than everybody else because it's all coming full circle that you do not get what you want all the time. It's just sad that it had to take her 40 fucking years to get a taste of it. That's where I blame the parents. That's where I blame the parents, right there. It should not take you 40 fucking years to realize life does not go your way. And you do not always get what you want. I used to hate that my parents would teach me that shit, but now I'm fucking grateful because I'm not Amy Bishop. On February 12th, 2010, the biology department, Amy's department, is having their weekly meeting. And this is, you know, it's kind of a challenge for Amy to be in there because they're actually already discussing plans for the next academic year, you know, fall of 2010. Amy's not going to be there because she didn't get tenure. So technically, she doesn't even have to be in that meeting. It's just putting salt in the wound at that point. And everybody can already tell something is off with Amy because she's normally very outspoken and opinionated, and she's just radio silent this time. Which, I mean, are we really surprised that Amy was very outspoken in her department meetings? I'm not. So, from all accounts, she seems like she's brooding. She looks a little agitated, and she's just super quiet. And then, as the meeting's kind of getting closer to an end, Amy gets up, takes out a gun, and shoots Gopi Pudilla, the biology department chair, in the head. He passes away immediately. He dies immediately. And she just starts firing one round after round. All of this that happens, that everything that's going to happen here, is going to be in less than a minute. That blew my fucking mind. She's firing left and right. People are going under desks trying to hide. At one point, a colleague, a friend of Amy's, comes from under the table, wraps her arms around Amy's legs, and begins to plead with her to make her think of everybody's families. Amy's family. Amy's daughter is a student at that campus at the time. Her daughter is a student. So she's telling her, like, think of these people. And what does Amy do? Amy just looks at her, points the gun at her, and fires. But instead of a booming sound, it's a click. The gun jams. This woman starts crawling away from Amy. Amy is literally following her, trying to fix the gun, shooting. Firing, trying to fix the gun, shooting. So it's just a little hand movement, click, little hand movement, click, little hand movement. That's even more terrifying because you can hear the amount of attempts that she wants you to die. You can hear it, the dedication. She doesn't give up. She is following her. That is more terrifying, I think, than just hearing the gun going off multiple times, is the anticipation of when it stops clicking and the boom start again. So there, she's able to crawl into a direction where Amy is in front of the door. The door is at her back. They shove her out, lock the door, and now they're safe. Amy, there's only one entry into this room, and Amy is now out of it. So what does Amy do? Just as cold and calculated as ever, Amy walks downstairs, goes into a restroom, washes up, discards her blood-soaked blazer and the gun, borrows a phone from a student, and calls James to pick her up. Luckily, the police arrive before James could, because I have no doubt, this man would have tried to hide her or helped her get away. And I'll explain why I'm a little hard on James also. You'll see why in a little bit, but all of this, again, this whole massacre was in less than a minute. Within this minute, we have 6 victims, 3 dead, 3 survivors. Gopi Podilla being the first who passed away. Then we have Stephanie Monticciolo. She was a department assistant. She survives. We have Adriel Johnson, another professor who passes away. Maria Ragland Davis, also a professor, passed away. The final two survivors also are professors, and their names are Luis Rogelio Cruz Vera and Joseph Leahy. 6 people, almost a 7th, less than a minute. Terrifying. And I'm sure that minute felt like an hour. That's terrifying. Those poor people. Luckily, there weren't a lot of students in the building at the time, so this didn't create as large of a panic as it could have. Amy's arrested, and of course, she tries to say that she's schizophrenic and she had an episode and she shouldn't be held responsible. All this shit as to why, you know, again, always a victim, never the problem. But it's kind of hard to say that you were in an episode when, one, you took the gun with you, but two, you were seen at a firing range with your husband just before with the gun that your husband had someone purchase illegally, so they didn't have to go through the waiting period. That sounds very schizophrenic to me. Also, as Candace DeLong said, love Candace DeLong. Candace DeLong even explains in her episode covering this case. I was so excited. I didn't even know she had a podcast. Now I gotta listen to all her stuff. She's great. Candace DeLong explained that if someone really did have schizophrenia, it's a thought disorder, which I didn't know. Fascinating to learn. So if Amy really was schizophrenic and unmedicated, It would have been nearly impossible for her to function the way she did, being able to deal with the stress of three children and finishing a PhD, things like that. She would have snapped a long time ago. Something would have broken already. So that, like, that's out. She's not schizophrenic. She's just fucking stupid and way too high and mighty on herself. And again, never learned consequence. Or, you know, again, I could be wrong and it just never fazed her. That's what's so fascinating about stuff like this. The mind. So she's arrested, and even at that, the day after she is arrested, Huntsville's police department gets a phone call from the chief of police back in Braintree, Massachusetts, her hometown. And the chief of police makes them aware that Amy shot and killed her brother 21 years ago and never faced any charges and was never held responsible. I want to know how her parents tried to cover that one. I understand not wanting to believe that one of your children killed your other child, your only son. I can understand the mental gymnastics a person would go through, because that is a hard pill to swallow. But the fact that you've had all these other problems within those 21 years, now she shot 6 people, killing 3 more. How do you lie that one away? How do you sweep that other under the rug? You would have to face it, that would be a challenge on its own. I'm sure it's an even bigger pill to swallow, because it's the realization of both. They really did kill your other child. And because you thought you were helping them and protecting them because you wanted to believe it was an accident, they killed 3 more. As much as I hold the parents responsible, that part breaks my heart for them, really. Because why would you think it would come to that? Even if you know that it's an attitude problem, what do you expect? You expect them to get fired from a job one day. Something like that. Not for them to kill other people. More people. So, that made me a little teary, because I got really sad for her there, for her parents, with the whole her killing her brother, because I couldn't imagine one of my kids killing one of my other kids. Ugh. So Amy was actually facing the death penalty, but her survivors didn't want more death. Then, June 2010, she's indicted for the murder of her brother Seth. And this, Amy just could not bear. Amy attempts suicide by slitting her wrists. It does not work. She lives. She's just held on suicide watch. And she ends up taking a plea deal to avoid the death penalty. In this plea deal, she is to plead guilty. But it also waives her rights to appeals. She cannot appeal her case if she were to take this. If she doesn't take the plea bargain, she is on the table for the death penalty for killing her brother Seth. It does make me curious, like, if they were going to go to trial, would they even be able... One, how do you get a jury that's not going to be biased after she just killed 3 other people? She did a mass shooting in a college. She doesn't even fit the demographic of a mass shooter. That's even more scary. Because I'm sure it just really put into play that it could be anybody. We know the common thread. But it can really be anybody. So... I need to stop saying so too. My God. She accepts the plea bargain, meaning she waives her rights to an appeal. And on September 24th, 2012, she is sentenced to life in prison without parole. And it wouldn't be Amy if it wasn't for this. 6 months later, she tries to appeal her case. Why would she do such a thing, you may ask? Her reason for an appeal is that she was never made aware that she was waiving her rights to an appeal, which is such fucking crap, because when you do things like this, the judge literally asks you, do you understand that you do not have this anymore? Should you take this? Like, should, basically, he has to ask her, do you understand that if you take this plea, you will not have rights to an appeal? You have to answer that, yes, you do understand, for this to even take place. If you say no, or I'm still unsure, that's it. It's off the table. You have to go back and figure it all out again. So that's a fucking lie. Obviously, that shit's tossed out. Fuck off, Amy. Just take the L. Finally, take the goddamn L. So, all right. Amy is, again, sentenced to life. Her appeal doesn't go through, because why would it? And this is when tragedy, like, hits even more. I don't even want to say this is karma, because I feel ugly saying that. I just want to call it, like, a cruel twist of fate. On April 18th, 2021, Amy's son Seth is shot and killed accidentally when him and another person were mishandling a gun. The gun accidentally went off, shooting her son Seth and killing him. Amy lost her son Seth the same way she killed her brother Seth. Let that sink in. That blew my mind when all of this came back into play after he died. Things were coming out like crazy, people realizing the irony of this. And this is what made me like want to cover this story when I decided I was going to do a podcast. Because, like I said, you can't write this shit. It makes me really sad for her son. And not just that, like, Amy was so caught up with herself, Amy, that Amy didn't realize that her decision to do a mass shooting, not even just doing a mass shooting, but doing a mass shooting at her daughter's college, she condemned all her fucking kids. She condemned them. They are, like, I find it hard to believe her daughter went back to that university. I find it hard to believe that. I most definitely feel like you would have to move after that. And can you go back to your hometown, your mom's hometown? Probably not, because they all know who she is also. And then you go through all this time of healing, and then your brother dies. Then you realize that your brother died the way your mom killed her brother. Where do your kids go from there? I most definitely feel for her children. Most definitely. I couldn't imagine what they go through and what they think on a daily basis. Because how do you would have to disassociate your mother from your brother in that way. Because when you want to think about your brother, I feel like you would have this little thought slither in of what your mom did to her brother. The person your brother is named after. That's what blew my mind and broke my heart at the same time. So now that we're all really fucking in shock and sad, how do you end this, right? Like, my God, it's tragic. But I implore y'all to really think about people other than yourselves. I get caught up in my own stuff. I think we all do. Life gets hard sometimes. It's hard to balance. Just remember not to be A.B. Bishop. Don't sentence your kids to a life of judgment. That's what she did. She condemned those children. She really did. Or at least the oldest, because the oldest was on campus. She was an adult. That's going to stick with her. Just remember, it's, you know, craft, do what you love, and understand consequence is a good thing sometimes. It's not life telling you it's hating you. It's life telling you that you need to make a change. Accountability is a big thing. I've been on an accountability kick for a little bit over a year, and I love it because I feel like a lot of my problems have gone away when I just realized sometimes it's not other things, it's me, and I need to fix something. It's very rewarding. So I hope y'all try that too. You'd be surprised with what you learn about yourself and what you're capable of yourself and the positivity that comes with it. I've never been this person, but I'm really happy to be this person now. So I will catch y'all soon. I hope you liked this episode. I know I became a real damper at the end. But yeah, I wish y'all the best. Keep crafting. Do what you love. Don't be Amy Bishop. Bye.